Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I got to tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I got to...
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
You know me, I'm your friend, your main boy, thick and thin. I'm your pusher man. I'm your pusher man.
Welcome to Sportsaholics, episode number 147, the Dave Steeb episode. Who the hell is Dave Steeb? Good question. Pitched for the Toronto Blue Jays in the 80s. Actually, the second winningest pitcher in the 1980s, only behind Jack Morris. Seven-time All-Star. A decent pitcher. A guy I had several of his cards as a child, but as you can tell, 47. Kind of slim pickings. I mean, seven-time All-Star isn't bad, but it's a baseball-themed episode this week. Our good friend Don Carlos, Ryan from Don Carlos Taco Shop at Eat a Burrito on Twitter. I think eataburrito.com. But anyway, Ryan's a great guy and took care of me during my wedding down in San Diego. He helped the night before. We had a big gathering. He brought down pounds and pounds of burritos and tacos, which were, of course, were incredible. And not only being an unofficial official sponsor, and that's why we always say, hey, guys, when you're in La Jolla, go to Don Carlos Taco Shop. It's on Pearl Street, Kitty Catty Corner from the world-famous comedy store down there in La Jolla. But aside from making incredible food, Ryan actually was a clubhouse attendant for the Padres for a couple seasons in the 90s. So we have him on this week just to really just cut loose, tell some great baseball stories. As a baseball fan, I love to hear it because it kind of puts me there in the clubhouse. There's a couple, you know, after-hours stories, if you will. But he really does do a great job of kind of letting us into what goes on, like how a day runs, what the players are kind of worried about, maybe focused on when they get to the game, that sort of thing. So that's going to be primarily the episode this week. I know we had, as we record, look, the Cavs are down 0-2, and I know last week we had Jason Lawhead on at Jason Lawhead on Twitter. Great comic, opens up for Bill Burr, headlines all over the country, from Cleveland. Die hard, Cavs fan, Indians fan, Browns fan, just sports fan in general. Lawhead's Court is actually his podcast, sports podcast. But we got, I really did think that the Cavs could steal one. I mean, they haven't played at home yet, but man, it looks like last year, and I don't, the only difference is they got Durant now. And I just, it is nasty. Dude, I mean, you got four guys that are just incredible. I mean, and then the fifth guy for the Warriors is just everybody else, which in that crew, you know, your Livingstons, your Iguodalas, even JaVale McGee can randomly go off for 16 points. I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, and seven games, if the Cavs are lucky to even win, to even get to a seventh game. And personally, I'm a little upset because I'm going to be touring next week all throughout the New England and the Northwest. And I was hoping to avoid a lot of NBA Finals conflict, if you will. But that inevitably isn't going to happen because, well, unless there's a sweep right now. But okay, real quick, before we get into the interview with Don Carlos, Pacific Northwest people, come on. Come on out. Have a laugh. Eureka at the Palm Lounge, Monday, June 12th. Tuesday, June 13th, the Merck Theater, Twisp, Washington. Wednesday, the 14th, Ambassador Winery in Woodinville, Washington. Seattle, it's Seattle. Thursday, the 15th, Branding Iron in Kennewick, Washington. Friday, the 16th, the Old Warehouse in Zilla, which apparently is an incredible show. 200 or 300 people packed that out. So if you live in that central Washington area, come on out. If you're in Medford, Oregon, Johnny B's, Medford, Oregon, Saturday, June 17th. Come on out to that. Guys, if you need a shirt, go to unionpresskc.com. unionpresskc.com. Get something printed up. You'll love it. They're great. They take care of us. They'll take care of you. We'll be back right after this with Ryan from Don Carlos, our unofficial official sponsor and the man that makes the best goddamn burritos in the world. For what you got. Diamond in the back, sunroof top, pig in the scene with a gangster lean. Diamond in the back, sunroof top, pig in the scene with a gangster lean. Diamond in the back, sunroof top, pig in the scene with a gangster lean. As promised, we are back. Ryan from the legendary Don Carlos Taco Shop, located, as always, on Pearl Street, Kitty or Catty Corner from the world-famous Comedy Store down in La Jolla. Ryan, how are you doing, man?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm super excited. And dude, that's too nice. That's way too nice of an intro. No, we're just a little tiny little taco shop.
A little tiny little taco shop that if you try to go to at the wrong time, you'll have to... It's so tiny, you'll actually be standing outside in line waiting to order food. Which is a good problem to have, I guess, if that's your taco shop. And you know what? It turns out it is. So congratulations on that.
And we just won 4 gold medals in the local newspaper for best burrito, best takeout, best place to go in a budget, and best Mexican fast food.
Yep, and I'm stealing your line because I saw it on Instagram. But yes, you are the Michael Phelps of the Mexican restaurant.
I'm glad you saw that because I'm like, well, it happened last year too. So I'm like going, dude, 8 gold medals. You can't deny it.
Oh, man, you're lucky there's not any Italian families around there that own Mexican restaurants because your shit would be on fire coming up. They'd be like, all right, we gotta put a stop to this Don Carlos guy. He's kind of running everyone out of business around here.
It's funny you mentioned that because I actually did my own sauce and my own meatballs a couple of days ago at home, and I was talking to Jason Tebow about possibly doing like a pizza burrito.
No.
No.
I mean, look, the only way that's going to fly, if you can somehow manage to deep fry and maybe get a big, like a real shallow deep skillet and take like an 18-inch tortilla and fry that and then fry 2 of them, melt cheese in the middle, and then build the pizza on top of the 18-inch tortillas. What do you think of that idea?
Well, see, I was thinking, I like that, but I was thinking about two things, like a handheld, like, almost like pasta dish.
Pasta. Pasta. So I'm thinking like tostadas. Like, okay.
Yeah. All right. Do like spaghetti and meatballs inside of a burrito and then put like the marinara sauce over the top with like the cheese on top of that melted down. So you have like a wet burrito, or you can stuff it all inside of it.
No.
And I was just thinking, mm-mm. I was thinking about it.
No. They have that already. It's called a calzone, man. Don't mess it up. That's already been invented.
I was like, oh, give it a shot. Let's see here.
Well, okay. Yeah. Listeners at home, the Don here, Ryan, if you're, first of all, when you're in La Jolla or I say Southern California, anywhere from like Orange County south, if you're within an hour, go. It's really that good. I mean, award winning, clearly, not just the last 2 years. I mean, for years and years and years, he just happened to sweep the competition the last 2 years. But Ryan, where did Don Carlos start? Because as a comic, like, and oh, yeah, I wanted to express that to the listeners. This is a staple for in a comedian's diet is Don Carlos. It's kind of like on your way to becoming a comedian. If you have not sampled the cuisine at Don Carlos, then you're not on the right path in your comedy career. It's the way I've always kind of looked at it.
I've actually had comics that, like, when they come in, they feel validated by meeting me. That it's usually their first trip to the Comedy Store or down here, down to San Diego, and that they're like, finally, I've heard about you. I'm finally meeting you. Thank you so much. And basically, well, long story short, started by my great uncle in 83. My cousin took it over, and then my mom and I bought it in 2001. And then a lot of trial and error. And I remember the first comic that came in, it was actually John Caponera. He was the first comic that invited me to the Comedy Store.
And John's I don't want to say old school guy, but he's like, I think he's from maybe Ohio. He's like a big,
Cubbies fan.
Okay, yeah, that's right, Chicago. Okay, that would
yeah, do. But yeah, he's a big Cubbies fan.
He's an old school Comedy Store guy, and you know, well respected, and you know, I love that dude.
And he invited us to the Comedy Store, and I didn't know what to expect. I've never been to stand up comedy. I always loved Cheech and Chong, Richard Pryor, all George Carlin. I mean, you name it. But he invited us, and so we got sat actually in the very front. And I remember the other comic that was featured, and it was Wild Bill Parsons, Wild Willie Parsons.
Willie Parsons, okay. And he again, if you're ever at the Comedy Store in Hollywood, he's got one of the more infamous headshots where it's like he went in to be casted as Rhodey for Creedence Clearwater Revival. I think is the best way to describe that Willie Parsons headshot. But
leather chaps, vest, and he also, I if I'm not mistaken, he also ran with Kennison too.
Yeah, part of the Wild. Were they the Wild Boys or the Outlaws?
Yeah,
the Outlaws.
Yeah, the Outlaws. Yeah. And I remember sitting up front with my dad, and this guy comes up, and I'm like, oh, this guy is not going to be funny, and he's going to be very aggressive towards me. And we're right up in front, and I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be awful. And I was totally wrong. I totally prejudged, and he broke through, and he made a connection with me, and I remember laughing and just really having a great time and just going, man, this was awesome. And I had a great night, and then I think a couple months went by, and then Ahmed came in, and he invited us over, and we had another great night. And then one of my favorite comics of all time, who I think he's one of the best. I still listen to his stuff, Freddie Soto.
Freddie, rest in peace. Rest in peace, Freddie Soto. Let me take a moment just for you guys in your cars or at work. Freddie Soto passed away and way too young, about maybe 10 years ago, and he was maybe in his early mid 30s, but a lot of people will say that Carlos Mencia, once Freddie died, Carlos Mencia's act all of a sudden got a lot stronger, if you know what I mean. And so he just, and not only was he a great comic, but he helped out a lot of comedians, especially at the Comedy Store, as far as with management and showcases. It was almost as if he prided himself on taking care of the next generation of comedians. I think that's the best way. And when he passed away, I remember that day at the Comedy Store because people were crying that I never thought I'd ever see cry. You know, it was really, yeah, it was a devastating event, you know, especially at the Comedy Store. I mean, that guy was as Comedy Store as Comedy Store could be.
Yeah, he there's still a big piece missing there, because that there's such a lineage of comics that he's helped, and that man, when he got up on stage, he owned it and he destroyed it, and he was so funny. I remember he brought his wife and his newborn daughter, and he was so funny and just charismatic, and I really made a connection with him. And we got to talking afterwards, and he goes, where's a good place to go eat around here? I'm like, hey, I own a taco shop right down the street. And he's like, well, do you have the keys for it? I'm like, yeah, but we're closed. He's like, well, let's go open it up.
There we go. And classic, so he classic went. Freddie right there.
Yep, he brought his family. And I'm going to say it was even Sebastian that was with him, early Sebastian. And I remember, like, we opened up the store, and I started making rolled tacos and feeding the family. And I had such a good time there that I kind of wanted to be more a part of a comedy store. So I started going more, and then things kind of progressed a little bit more. Then with just hanging out there, you start getting to know comics, and I got to know Ari Shaffir. And
I think Ari would agree. He's somewhat of a Freddie Soto disciple.
Oh yeah. That's who he was looking up to. I mean, that was who he was peeking through the window at the Hollywood Comedy Store,
right? Like Freddie, Freddie had like 20 wings to put you people under. You know, I swear. Yeah. You know what I mean? He was that kind of a guy.
And I really liked Ari's comedy and Brett Ernst and Steve Simone and all these guys. And I remember one time Ari came down. I think he was featuring. I don't know who he was featuring with. And he walked by the taco shop. I'm like, hey, Ari, aren't you going to come on in? And he goes, I have like $15. I'm like, well, that's more than enough to get a burrito. And he's like, no. That's what I have. That's what I have to get.
That's my value monetarily as a human right now.
Yeah. And I'm like, you're kidding me. But I saw you up on stage, and I what's going on? You're on the front of the Comedy Store there. And he goes, and then he kind of broke it down to me as how much he got paid. And so I made it a point that if I know the comedian, and if I'm working, and or if I can tell my crew that's working there, hey, don't charge this guy ever, because that I know that they don't get fed. And Ari was even telling me that he's like, there's times I slept in my car. And he's like, there's comics that do that all the time, that they may not eat for the weekend just to save money. And I'm like, man, but you put so much laughter into my heart, but yet you're going through so much pain. I'm like, the least I can do is feed you and give you a burrito. And he's like, well, hey, if I'm on a podcast, or I don't even take a podcast, I'll give you a MySpace shout out.
Yeah, for sure. This would have circa, this is 06, 07, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I'll put something on MySpace for you. And so from that point on, I like to tell comics, I'm like, there's no charge. But Facebook it, Instagram it, Etsy it, Twitter it, podcast it, mention it, wear it, whatever you got to do, just get the word out about Don Carlos, eataburrito.com. And then there's just one little catch.
@eataburrito on Twitter and Instagram, @eataburrito.
And Don Carlos on Facebook. But there's just one little stipulation there, is that when someone I feed, when they are physically holding a check for $1 million, not what they're worth, but when they physically hold the check for $1 million, the next time they come into Don Carlos, their burrito is going to be 10 grand. And I always said that kind of facetiously, like, oh yeah, dude, that's never going to happen. But now, like, with the level of comics that are coming up, and then with the level of rise of comedy, I think we're looking at something.
You're about to cash in. I'm just saying, like, When Ari goes from having $15 to here in a couple of years filming the 15th season of This Is Not Happening, you know, I feel like at some point maybe a check is headed your way. I mean, I know Sebastian's probably good for it. I don't know what his bank account looks like, but anytime you're in a car with Jerry Seinfeld for more than 5 minutes, I feel like you probably got over $1 million. I mean, that's just, I think,
but
how that guy rolls.
Not in your bank account, but a physical check that says $1 million.
Okay, so you're for like the big blockbuster. So you really got to like land a big special or Netflix, some sort of Netflix deal, and then
and then
you're looking at some money. Okay, I see.
Yeah, and I've had almost every comic that's rolled through San Diego, with the exception of I think Tom Segura and Bert Kreischer, but I mean I think Bert's coming here in a couple months to the Comedy Store, and he's one of my favorite comics.
Bert's never been down there to the Don Carlos.
He hasn't played the Comedy Store.
No kidding. He's all over the place. So, and he's a funny guy, and so his calendar is pretty full.
I love him because he's a dad. He's a good dad, and he's a bigger guy, and he also too he treats his kids kind of like adults too. And really funny guy. Really funny guy.
He actually gave me some of the best advice that I'd never followed. About 6 years ago, we did a show together at the Hard Rock in Vegas. And afterwards, we're eating post-dinner and at the bar. And he goes, you know what? Here's some advice. No one, comedy doesn't pay shit. No one cares. If he's like, if you're out here just to be a comedian, he's like, that's cool. But he's like, people don't care about comedians. You got to write a show. You got to do other stuff. You can't just do comedy. I was like, yeah, okay. I'll get on to not writing that show then for another 6 or 7 years.
And then now you look back, you're like, fuck, he was right.
No, I knew he was right then. I was just a dumbass 29, probably drunk or who knows. But point being, like,
hindsight's always 2020.
2010, actually, better than perfect, yeah. I always say. Yeah. As of about a year ago, I came up with that term.
That's good.
But no, look, as far as promoting it, like, that's why we dropped Don Carlos on the show. Like, for my wedding, the night before we're getting ready, Ryan knocks on the door. He's got, oh man, I would, about 20, 25 pounds worth of delicious Don Carlos burritos, an assortment. I mean, it was so good. It hit the spot. I mean, that's the kind of heart and soul this man has. But it's not all about food, because Ryan actually used to work for the San Diego Padres. And that, I kind of wanted,
correct.
I wanted to touch base on and get a little insight. What is it like working in a major league locker room? And when in the years, what years were those specifically also?
It was 98 to 2001. So it's basically part of the last of the 98 season to 2001. And I was there for the World Series. When the Yankees won the World Series here in San Diego, I was the guy that had to go and put up the plastic in the locker room.
Oh, the victorious plastic, the champagne, yeah. Stuff. Okay.
So yeah. And then I even had to buy the champagne too. I got sent out by the boss to go out and get as many bottles of Veuve Clicquot. Oh no, Pierre Joliet magnums. He only wanted magnums. He's like, buy out all of San Diego. Whatever you can get, just buy it.
What did okay. So you spent about 20 grand on champagne, or probably more than that.
Oh yeah. I mean, and we had guys, we were called locker room attendants, or clubhouse attendants, sorry. And we had about like 3 guys scouring San Diego trying to find as many balls as we could. And we had to be kind of secretive of it, because he didn't want, Steinbrenner was very superstitious. So he didn't want to kind of like go, okay, it's in the bag, we're going to win. So I think it was the day before that we were out looking, and he didn't have anything set up for that. So we were out just scouring San Diego as much as we can find, just get it, bring it back there. In addition to doing our regular jobs, and also to doing runs for the players,
making their life as easy as possible
in anything that they wanted. See, what a lot of people don't realize is that Major League Baseball, you have the home clubhouse attendants, and you have the visiting clubhouse attendants. The visiting clubhouse attendants, that's exactly what we are. The visiting teams come, whatever their needs are, and basic needs, washing their clothes, hanging, drying, food, all that stuff. That's what we provide in Major League Baseball too. You to provide a meal after the game, because games can come kind of late. So you just have to provide a meal. The players choose to eat it or not, whatever.
It's probably, yeah, it's part of their player agreement. You know, when they sign their labor agreements, it's like, we want food after every ball game.
Yeah, so it's got to be a hot meal too. It's not like, hey, here's a sandwich. And so, like, the players, they get there at odd times, and a lot of times they're like, you know what, we're in Southern California. I'm going to buy In-N-Out Burger for the whole entire locker room. So they'll peel off $600 and go get 80 In-N-Out Burgers, double doubles.
Damn. That, yeah. I mean, that. And if you've never been to In-N-Out, if you live in the anywhere outside of the West Coast or Southern California, the line anyway at In-N-Out is always 15, 20 minutes. I mean, it's 10, 11 cars deep minimum every time you go there. In fact, when you go to In-N-Out and there's only 3 cars in line, that's a victory. Like, you're happy at that point. There's only 3.
It got to be so ridiculous sometimes that the people at In-N-Out, they'd see me walking up and they would start shaking their head, because you're like, oh, this fucking asshole. Because they knew that I was going to, like, hold up the line for a long time.
You're just, okay, here comes 45 minutes on one ticket. Okay.
Exactly, exactly. And then you're walking out, and you're like, dude, where do I put it? And you got it in the back of the truck. You got milkshakes all over the place. And then you also had the stuff of that particular players wanted, like Ishmael Valdez, he wanted Toro, the fatty part of the tuna belly, but he wanted like 5 pounds of it. And no place, no sushi restaurant carries 5 pounds of Toro. So we had to go to like to a fish purveyor.
Valdez? What the hell? Is he like a relief pitcher? Or
he was a starter, I believe, for the Dodgers.
Oh, okay. And he was on the visiting team too? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, no, but then what was always cool is like, so you'd run out and then he'd peel off maybe $400 or $500, whatever, and then you'd get back and he'd give you 200.
Oh, okay. So he did take care of you guys. He made it worth it.
Oh, yeah. And then also, too, the visiting team is required to give at least $100 a day each player to the clubhouse manager. So each player on getaway day, they give out $300 at the very least.
Okay.
And that's a given at any stadium, $100 a day. And if they kind of stiff them, it's a really bad sign that you guys did a shitty job. If like a player doesn't pay up. But most of the times, I mean, depending on the player, depending on their needs, they would give $500-$600, whatever. And then tips would get filtered down usually, but I won't say anything disparaging, but my boss was kind of a jerk. So we kind of pooled our tips together. And then so we would kind of at the end of the homestand, we would divvy out the tips later on amongst ourselves.
What we
thought was fair.
And then would you get the occasional like, hey man, you're my guy. Here's an extra 50. I mean,
Chuck McElroy. He from the very beginning, he would come through, and I think it was when he was at the Mets, then he got transferred to somebody else. He wanted a Crown Reserve in his locker room for nobody else but me, like on getaway day. He wanted like 4 bottles of it and like a box of cigars or whatever. And he was like, I don't care. You're the only person that's going to be doing it. And I'm like, okay, fine. Mark Grace, he has a boot stein, and he would come into the locker room. And you know about
was he like German or something? Like who? Like he just had a boot stein, like that he traveled with.
Yeah, he had a boot stein in his bag. And then what was cool is he'd come in early, and then he'd ask. He goes, "Okay, who unpacked my bag?" And I'm like, "Here, Mr. Grace." And he's like, "Okay, here's the deal. Nobody else touches my bag for the whole entire homestand. You're the only person that does my locker." He goes, if we win, I want this boot stein filled with Coors Light. Not Bud Light, not Miller Light, not any other type of light, but Coors Light. If we lose, I don't want to see you for 15 minutes.
That's great. Just simple instructions. He's like, this is how I like it.
Yeah. And you were supposed to meet him as soon as cameras weren't present. You were supposed to meet him down by like where they would get off camera and have that boot stein. So there was, if it was a close game, you're like, fuck, dude, like what, and you're waiting there with this boot stein and oh shit, dude, they lost. And you're dumping it and hiding underneath the bleachers.
Dude, baseball. That's why I love baseball. I mean, just, I don't know what happens in the NFL, and I'm sure they have a good time too, but just,
there's so many superstitions,
like
and
the
that these guys.
Room. It's like the definition of locker room is a baseball locker room. I mean,
it's not a locker room. I mean, it's a clubhouse.
Clubhouse.
I mean, that's that's what like I kept. Even now, I kind of catch myself, but it's a clubhouse, and it's a sanctum for them, because you got to remember too that like these guys are on the road a lot, in that they like things done a particular way in every single city. And they just want it done this way because it kind of gives them that rhythm throughout the season of this is what we do, this is how we do things.
Yeah, if they can kind of replicate a home away from home every time they're the visiting team, you know, that, you know, kind of create some
and that's
similarities.
That's exactly what they do.
Yeah. Okay.
And in that they like, hey, I need this type of drink, or I need this type of tea or beer or whatever. And I was there when we were allowed to give away chewing tobacco and smokes and stuff like that. We had a whole entire closet full of chewing tobacco, smokes, Copenhagen, not to mention copious amounts of nudie magazines.
Pre-internet days. Glorious.
Yeah. And we would literally go, dude, you can see hairs on her butthole. Dude, someone didn't crop this out.
A young Tony Gwynn Jr. is walking around. They're like, quick, Tony Jr.'s here. Hide it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I always felt bad when, like, women reporters came in because, like, the nudie mags were, like, this huge stack. I mean, literally as tall as your leg. And it's this huge stack of magazines right in the middle of like the clubhouse. And I'm like, oh man, dude, they're okay. Well, I don't. And then you learn that the nuances of being in the locker room too. If you
grab them in the pussy. I mean, Trump pulled the curtain back on that one for all of us.
No, the one that you quickly learn is if you look more than 2 seconds, you're gay.
And that's why Mike Piazza had to have that press conference declaring that he wasn't gay. I am not gay. It's because he got caught. He got busted staring a couple too many times.
I remember there was one guy that came, I think he was with the Giants. I'm not sure who the player was, but he came out of the shower and he's like, hey, Bobby, today we going to be playing with this. And he takes out his dick. And this thing's the biggest thing ever. I'm like going, oh, my God, that's a javelin, dude. I'm like going, oh, dude, don't look. But I'm like, everybody else is looking, so it's okay.
You're like, he's swinging it around like a bat. So, I mean, yeah. I got really no other option.
Yeah, it looked like a really thick fungo bat.
Let's just say that was Barry Bonds with a Dominican accent is who that was. Just for the sake of funny.
Man, there were so many like instances where like, and it was so much fun because like you would show up and make no mistake about it. I mean, it was hard work too. I mean, that long hours, and you'd work 2 week stretches at a time sometimes with no days off whatsoever, and you were working 16, 17 hour days sometimes.
Yeah, think about that because okay, you go into extra innings, game gets over at midnight, 12:30. Well, then you know. That's Saturday night's game. Well, Sunday's game starts at 12:40. So what time do you have to be at the stadium after a late night anyway? And what time do you leave the stadium?
Well, so you figure on about like 2 hours worth of laundry. So that's why like when we're in there, when the players are getting right off the field, we have the laundry baskets and we're getting all the stuff in the wash because a lot of it can't be dried. It has to be hung dried. So you're basically tearing off everything off their body, and then we're responsible for their cleats. We gotta brush the cleats. We gotta polish them too, and then any or other sort of like damage to the uniforms, or like if there's grass stains, somebody's gotta clean them, and that's usually a clubhouse guy. So like you would kind of like Rochambeau on like who's staying late tonight to scrub so and so's pants because he decided to take a header. Getting a chasing after a foul ball.
It's like good luck getting the pine tar off the back of the jersey. Yeah.
Yeah, and you like it makes for great TV, but there's always some kid back down there going, oh man, I'm gonna have to clean that.
You're like, damn, there's another play at the plate. That's 20 extra minutes of work tonight.
Yeah, and then you're also sitting there going, I want to go out drinking tonight. Dude, that's not happening.
Well,
so, yeah, I mean that you'd probably leave about like 1, and then if it's a 1 o'clock game here on the West Coast, we'd end up getting here maybe 8.
So
8 o'clock,
a good 4 hours before first pitch, you're there, if not 5.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also too, you got people that are kind of staggering in. So you'd have one guy come in and open everything up because the players, you're expected to have that open whenever they wanted to. So if the player wanted to be there early in the morning at 6 a.m., you were expected, someone was expected there to be there.
Okay, and but they would let you know that. They're like, hey, tomorrow morning.
Most of the time.
Okay.
There was times when my boss was calling me, hey, get down there, open it up. So-and-so is talking to security or what. And I lived the closest to the stadium, so.
Okay.
You were expected to have everything open and ready for them, coffee brewing. And then I don't know if you know this, but like there's getaway days. I don't know if the listeners know it, but getaway days are basically, there's a reason why Thursdays and Sundays are always early games.
Yeah. Travel and just so they can get to the next city and relax a little bit, have a few extra hours off and,
Exactly. Yeah. And then also too, on those days though, you're stripping off clothing and you're just putting it into a bag. And then the next city that they're traveling to takes out the dirty clothes and washes it there. Okay. So you can kind of gauge, and like if they're doing a West Coast swing going from LA to San Francisco to LA to Colorado down to San Diego or vice versa, you kind of knew where everybody was going and passing it along to everybody.
That's crazy though. So if Javelin Cock came in, was like, even on the visiting teams, like, I want to be in at 5:30. You're like, I'll just sleep in my car, I guess. Cause it's,
There was a couple of times where we had, cause we used the Chargers locker room, the visiting
former San Diego Chargers locker room.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, not their locker room, but the visiting locker room. For the team. And so it was split up. It mirrored itself. There's a big locker room and then a shower, coach's room, training room, and just one door in the back that you can kind of go back and forth with. So they wouldn't be uncommon that we'd have one team still there and one team came in and we have their stuff ready to go on the other side so that when one would go, we just kind of flip over and start doing the other stuff. We were literally like hot bunking it.
You're just like a baseball warehouse. You got the new shipment ready to unload and you're shipping out the old stuff.
And then carting everything up to the buses and the vans and getting everybody packed and loaded. And then, oh shit, did we forget anything or did they forget anything? I mean, that was always the fear of like, oh, we forgot Mark McGwire's bats.
You mean I stole them again? Yeah. Sorry about that.
You're like, oh shit, dude, like he's gonna need those.
Well, not especially on that 98 season, huh?
Oh yeah.
I bet that was a circus when he came to town.
Oh, it was always crazy. And I always made it a point, and I think everybody else did too, is that we would never we weren't supposed to get autographs, but we always did. And we would never do it like hand them a baseball, hey, here, can you sign this? If we got an opportunity, we're like, hey, Mr. McGwire, on getaway day, could you sign a couple baseballs for the crew?
And oh, okay, nice.
So that way that we weren't here, sign this, that we gave him the opportunity to say no.
Yep.
And that, like,
you're almost scheduling it. You're like, hey, look, I'll set the balls in your locker. And I'll be like, yeah, cool.
Exactly. That, hey, you know what? And there was a couple guys that were like, nah, I'm not going to do that. And you're like, okay, fine, whatever. And there was a couple guys that were just like, yeah, sure. Dude, give me the ball now. I'll just sign it. I'm like, oh, okay. Hey. Thank you, Mr. Griffey.
Yeah. You know, every locker room has a couple Steve Harveys in it. That's just how it goes, you know?
you mean Barry Bonds?
Oh, man. Yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
He was incredible batter and roids and all that stuff. With or without roids. I mean, because I was young. I was old enough to remember the Pirates Barry Bonds, you know, and so he was an amazing player before the roids, and then he just got, you know,
Small head Barry, not the big head one.
Yeah, seven and a quarter Barry was a good Barry. Yeah. Seven and seven eighths Barry was not a bad Barry either. They were both good Barrys. You know, we're just curious. Yeah. How did your head grow three hat sizes when you were 36
exactly
years old? I don't know if you have time. I mean, you once told me this.
I got more time.
You told me this great story about, I believe it was the Cincinnati Reds and maybe an Applebee's and a truck.
No. It was McGregor's, actually. One of the places we used to go to, right next door to Qualcomm Stadium.
That's right.
There's a little bar named McGregor's. And what we did is because we were also responsible for the bat boy. You always, the team would the visiting side would provide a bat boy, and it wasn't like some random kid. It was usually an adult and that knew, okay, this is what I got to do. This is what's expected. And sometimes the teams would come and they'd bring like some player's kid or whatever. And it was always a pain in the ass because this kid was usually a piece of shit. And
some rich baseball players. Yeah. Soon to be pro baseball kid who's going to be a big leaguer in 12 years.
They weren't all like that, but like we had ways of treating them too, but I'll get to that. But we would always, we always had our own guy. And so after the games, usually the equipment manager, sometimes like if it was Mark McGwire or Sammy Sosa, Cubs or the Cardinals, he'd go, we want all the broken bats at the end of the game. And you're like, okay, fine. But most of the time, like they didn't care. They're like, just throw them away for all I give a shit. And so what we started doing is we started giving them, because the bat boy would get all the bats. And so we'd kind of look at them and go, okay, whose is this? And then hey, does anybody want such and such bats? I'm drawing a blank on a name. And, oh, yeah, a buddy of mine, he's a big
like
fan
a
of
Jason Giambi or somebody, you know, like a Jermaine.
Or like a Piazza. You're like, oh yeah, dude, I got a friend that he's a huge fan, and yeah, give him the bat and fine, whatever. And then so we'd take some of the extra bats that we had and we'd go down to McGregor's and we'd give them the bats, and they started mounting them up on the walls, and we got to drink for free.
Oh, that is a very that's a fair exchange right there.
Yeah, until our boss found out, and then he kind of started doing the same thing. And
he's like, that's a great idea, guys. I'm not going to fire you, but I'm going to steal all your money.
Yeah, exactly. We're like, fuck. So one night we were down there, and a bunch of the players asked us, like, hey, where's everybody go drink around here? And we're like, oh, we go to McGregor's. And I think I was the last person into McGregor's, and all the Reds there, Dimitri Young, Denny Nagel, the Boones. There was one guy, even like a TV star in there. There was a whole bunch of basically the Chicago Reds.
Ron Burgundy?
No.
Damn.
I'm forgetting the guy's name.
It's probably good that you forgot the guy's name.
He was friends with Danny Nagel, who they nicknamed Party Incorporated.
I'd love to have that poster in my room.
So we're going late too. I mean, it's really late, and there was a bunch of Marines in there. And Danny Nagel, he was buying drinks for everybody, and everybody was getting pretty wasted. And he ends up getting into a fight with a bunch of Marines. And we're out in the back parking lot, out in the parking lot, and they're going to, like, full-on fight. Like, the Marines and the Chicago Reds are going to, like, throw down. And I'm like, oh, dude, this isn't going to be good because this is going to be all over the news tomorrow that, like, Cincinnati Reds.
United States Marines versus the Cincinnati Reds, the oldest baseball team in Major League Baseball.
And then I can see myself like in the lineup picture, like there's all these pro baseball players, and I'm like, I kind of gathered. I think it was Boone, and I kind of like, hey, I got my truck here. Let's get everybody out of here. Let's just get everybody out so that nothing happens, so you guys don't get in trouble. Okay, fine. So we literally are piling everybody in the truck, and I had forgotten that they were staying downtown. Usually they would stay, there was a like a Marriott pretty close to the stadium, but they're actually staying at the Marriott downtown, which is quite a distance away from the stadium.
It's 5 or 6 miles. I mean, you get on two different highways to get there.
And so I have my little shitty S10 truck, and I have basically about 6 or 7 of the Cincinnati Reds in the back of my truck going down the 163 going, oh dude, if I get stopped, I'm so busted. Like, there's no way that a cop's not going to stop me if he sees me. It's not happening at all. That, like, you're not allowed to have anybody in the back of your truck, and I got 7 guys back there. I'm like, I'm so busted, gonna lose my job. Oh. And by the grace of God, I pull into the Marriott, dump all of them out. And I remember Denny getting out, and he's just pouring out of it, just can't walk and just slurring his speech.
Dude, he just got done buying a bar rounds, and then some Marines.
Oh, picked several rounds.
Several rounds, and a Marine picked a fight with him, or vice versa, however that went down. But
and
then
it was Marines, plural.
Marines, plural. And then let me ask you this. Denny set shotgun, right?
No, I actually think he was in the back.
Really?
And that kind of worried me too, because I'm like, I'm looking in my rearview mirror, and there's people hanging literally off the side out of my truck. I'm like, oh, dude, I'm so dead. And we get there, and I'm like, oh, dude, like, I'm not going to lose my job. This is perfect. And so the next morning, I think it was a Sunday game, so it was an early game. The next morning, Denny comes walking in, and he sees me, and he smiles, and he's right as rain. You would have thought that nothing had happened. I mean, he probably
already gotten done running 2 miles or something. You know what I mean? He's probably one of those guys.
Yeah, exactly. And he peeled off 10 $100 bills and goes, thanks. I'm like, dude, that was awesome. And then so I went and I told my buddies and that we're going to have to pull this. And they're like, no, you did that on the off time. That was all you. So you keep that.
Oh, man, that's yeah. Good for you for going to the pool. You're like, hey, guys, I'm looking out for you, too. You know,
yeah.
And you're like, Denny, I'm not going to tell anybody about this for 19 years.
Exactly.
And then I'm going public on the Sportsaholics podcast.
There was one kid I remember from the Diamondbacks. I'm forgetting his name. Good looking kid. He was a reliever, and he came out to, I think, Vanilla Ice. And I want to remember his name, but I can't remember it. And one night I was closing up, and he asked, he's like, hey, where's a good place to go? I'm like, well, we go over here. And he's like, do you mind if I get a ride? I'm like, yeah, sure. I mean, it's not like a Lexus. Or...
Yeah, pre-Uber. It's a pain in the ass to grab a taxi. This is 98.
And I found that a lot of the guys, if they had something to do, they liked just being in a regular car with, like, regular people instead of, like, a taxi cab or whatever. I mean, there was a bunch of catchers that I had to run around, and we had to get some stuff for. I think even guitar strings I had to get for, like, a catcher. And he's like, I'll go with you. I'm like, okay, fine. They just kind of liked just being – doing something, not, like, being waited on, but, like, okay, we're just going to go buy guitar strings, something normal that was part of their day.
Yeah, plus if they walk in with a normal person, maybe they're less likely to just, you know, like, is that a professional athlete? You know, it's like,
yeah,
I could see that. So
yeah, and they just liked, I mean, just regular conversation, not like, I mean, and we kind of knew that, like, I mean, hey, I'm not going to ask you for your autograph or shake you down or whatever, and just regular conversation about your day and where you grew up and stuff like that. Just And they, I guess they kind of like that because they're in a new city all the time and people are applauding them or jeering them or whatever. And that, hey, it's real conversation. So this one ball player, we go to the McGregor's, and good looking kid too. And these
like,
girls
like
are
more
up.
Than like more than 2 seconds good looking or under 2 seconds.
Yeah, actually, yeah, dude, he was a good-looking cat. Yeah, he was a good-looking cat. Young, really young. But he had a cannon for an arm. I'll never forget that. He had a cannon for an arm. He played for life of me, I can't remember his name. These girls were coming. They knew who he was. There's a lot of the groupies would hang out at McGregor's because they kind of knew that we'd send them over there. So that a lot of the groupies would hang out and they knew that like the visiting team might be showing up and they could hook up with a ball player or something like that.
Plus the opposing player knows that the hottest women in America live in San Diego. And so they're anticipating the week there.
And so these girls are coming up and we're drinking. We're off to ourselves. And these girls come up and you could tell that they wanted to engage him. And he would just immediately shut them down with just the most filthy things that he could ever imagine. I want to fuck you. I want to fuck your ear hole. I want to do this and this and this. Just really grotesque things. And I'm like, I'm standing by him going, oh, dude, that's awful. He's like, I want your mom to watch. I want this. And these girls, they were like, oh, you're an asshole. And he would basically shine them. And the girls like would talk amongst themselves like, oh, he's a dick. I'm like, dude, why would you do that? And he shows me his wallet. And this is back when we didn't have cell phones or whatever. So he had pictures of his wife, one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. And he goes, I don't want to fuck this up. He goes, I know if I'm nice to these women, they're going to keep coming back to me and they're going to keep on trying. He's like, so this way I immediately shut them down and they're not going to bother me all night. I'm like, that's pretty genius, bro.
That's not a bad.
That's pretty genius.
And that was back in the late 90s where that was actually considered an opening line, you know, that was acceptable socially,
oh,
you know.
Oh, dude, like some of the things he said, I'm like, oh, man. But then you're like, oh. And there's so many stories. Ryan Dempster. I mean, Ryan Dempster, like you got the clown. He was the clown of the locker room. I remember he had one of those exploding, one of those electrical pens. And so we had Mark Grant in there. And he came up to me, Ryan Dempster. He's like, hey, is that Mark Grant? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you know about the pen, right? I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm not touching it. And he's like, hey, go up to him. And he's given an interview to some other person before the game. And he goes, go up to Mark Grant and ask for his autograph. Kind of like be pushy, though. Like right during the interview. And so I'm like, okay. So I go over there and Mr. Grant, and he's like, I'm giving an interview. I'm like, Mr. Grant, Mr. Dempster would like to get your autograph. And he's like, oh, okay. And he looks over and Ryan's like making the sign for like, sign the baseball. And he's like, oh yeah, sure. Hold on. And he puts the microphone under his arm and he clicks the pen and just gets shocked. Oh hell. And Dempster's over there laughing. I mean, dude, he had those lottery tickets too. He would give them out, the ones that where you win $1 million.
Dude, he'd this give guy those sounds out to, awesome.
Oh, dude, he
or would, the worst, depending on.
He would he'd bring them in, and he would have some of his teammates. He's like, yeah, I just bought some lottery tickets. Hey, here you go, scratch them off. Let's see if we win anything. And like you'd see, like, oh my god, I won $1 million.
He's like, no way.
And we're just dying laughing. Just
that's crazy. You won $1 million and you're making your major league debut on the same day. What are the odds?
Exactly. There were so many cool stories. I do miss it though.
Yeah, well, you know what? But you've got all those memories, and I'm sure like we'll probably get into some more on a later episode, but you have those memories forever, man. And that's as a baseball fan myself, like I would love for that opportunity. And I've gotten nowhere near that type of exposure to the players and that stuff. The closest I've gotten is I've worked at Dodger Stadium when I first moved to LA, and I've worked in high school at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City to raise money for my sports team type of a thing. And so, you know, you get access to certain tunnels and things like that as an employee working there at the stadium. But so you kind of feel like I'm a little bit closer to the action. You know, it's like I'm there 3 hours before the game watching batting practice. But I'm certainly not cleaning dirty jerseys and uniforms and things like that.
And I did sell peanuts and Cracker Jacks at the stadium way before.
What was that, like 1946? Like,
I remember that. Yeah, no, I lied about my age. I think I was 12 or 13, and I sold peanuts and Cracker Jacks there. And there was all these doors where, like, they would open for a little bit, and you would, like, what's in there? And then, like, you'd see baseball players, and like, oh, man. And then I get the opportunity to be over there and do that and have that access.
Now, is that like Benito Santiago Padres, Dave Winfield Padres? Like, what? Who are the stars of the team back then?
When I was working, or when I
when you first snuck into Qualcomm or Jack Murphy or whatever the hell it was called,
as a paying customer, yeah. It was Rupert Jones. There was a group of people out in left field called Roop's Troops, and Yeah, I mean, there was the Steve Garveys, the Tim Flannerys, Benito Santiago, Dave Dravecki.
Dave Dravecki, man, and that's...
Goose Gossage. Actually, Goose Gossage, one of the coolest things I got to do is Goose Gossage, one night when we were going over to McGregor's, we're just walking into McGregor's, and I look over, and he's still got the handlebar mustache. I'm like, "You're Goose Gossage." He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Can I buy you a beer?" He's like, "Yeah, sure thing." I'm like, "Dude, that's so, you have no idea. Like, I'm such a big fan." Like, I remember I was a little kid just out in the, whenever they would bring him in, Goose.
And that's the thing with that area. A lot of the players, like, why leave San Diego? It's I call it Hawaii on the mainland because, you know, it's just a military base disguised as a city, really, you know, with all the military stuff around there. But it's weather's perfect. There's a lot of old, you know, retired athletes that live. I mean, Kawhi Leonard lives right down the street. He comes into, you know, unofficial name drop, I guess, or official unofficial name drop. Kawhi Leonard eats the shit out of Don Carlos burritos. Like, he's probably already maybe on his way there right now, considering.
considering circumstances.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the secret ingredient to the success this year. No, I actually told him, I'm like, "Dude, if you don't do well this year, don't blame me."
Well, you didn't injure his ankle. That was, you know, bad support in the shoes. But but man, look, I appreciate you just pulling the curtain back here for a little bit on some of those old stories. And look, you had that up. You did that for 3 years, man. You got some amazing access to Major League Baseball that most fans only can dream about.
And the cool stuff is that I never really took it for granted. Like, one of my job duties was to clean up like the coach's office after they left. And so one night, during the trading deadline, I'm cleaning up the coach's office. I'm taking out the trash, and there was just one piece of paper. Not one piece of paper. There was a big folder stapled thing of phone numbers, and I'm like, "Oh, maybe this was important. They forgot it." And so I start looking through it, and I talk to my boss. He's like, "No, it was in the trash. It's trash." And what it was all the contact information for every head coach, general manager, owner, anybody in Major League Baseball that needed to be contacted if you were going to do a trade that night. I had their phone numbers.
Excuse me, is your refrigerator running?
Exactly.
Because Ricky Henderson? I'll trade you right now, Ricky Henderson again. We want him back on the Padres because I think he played in San Diego in '98, wasn't he? Just for like 38 games or something like that, or was he there for
a
couple seasons?
For a season.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Ricky played for 13 teams, so
he was awesome too. But yeah, I kept that. Like little things that like normal people would just kind of like just toss away, or even like autographs. Like when Hideki Matsui came into the league, exactly. Cause he shined on the Padres to go to the Yankees.
Yeah. That was a big deal. What was that? Like,
deal. Well, he's like, "I'm not playing for them. I'm playing for the Yankees. Like the Yankees are good." I had him sign in two baseballs, and I had him sign in Japanese caricature. So like in his what it really looks like in Japanese,
yeah.
And then on another baseball, I had him sign like his American name
it just
on
says
there.
Greg, like I swear, it's a document.
I kept a lot of the stuff that like that just people would just throw away, and Kevin Brown after the '98 season, he came back and he was actually on the Dodgers. And the Padres were on a 13-game win streak, the longest win streak that they've ever achieved. And the 13th one was going to be against Kevin Brown. And so he gets shelled, and the home side calls, and they're saying, "Hey, you know what, hide everything." And we're like, "Why?" And he's like, "Just hide everything. He's going to get into a rage inside the clubhouse." So we take everything down, chairs, trash cans, whatever that was throwable. There's only a TV on an arm. And so he comes in the locker room, strips down butt naked, tears the TV off the arm, crashes all over the place.
This is an old TV, not a flat screen. This is an old school.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And like the tube. And then he's looking for a trash can and can't find one because we hit them all. So he goes to like this other area where all the clubhouse attendants, where we had our lockers, and he just throws it, and he threw it into my locker. And I had gone for like a job interview or something like that earlier, and I had a nice white pressed shirt. And so his spikes just like destroyed my shirt. I'm like, oh man. And then the equipment manager comes over and goes like, just give me the top, everything else, just throw it away. I'm like, can I keep it? I'm like, yeah, yeah, that's fine. So I have his game worn spikes.
That ruined your...
with dirt on them. And then I also have his hat. He's got a little pinhead. And then I have the next day, they have the reports of what happened in the previous game. I have those too. And I've been meaning to get them mounted. But I kept things that were kind of like cool, that were more sentimental. And now I'm to the point where I don't like autographs just for the sake of getting an autograph. If you could tell me a story about it, like that means more to me.
Yeah.
Because like, there's so many stories that I have that go along with these pieces that I'd never sell because that they mean something. It's not like I bought it online or somebody got it for me. I mean, it's something if like your dad gets it for you.
And those are nice too. And those are nice too. I've got a few things, you know, like being a sportsaholic, like whenever my collection is very similar to what you're describing. Like I have an autographed Ben Zobrist baseball, but it's the baseball that my buddy and I were playing long toss with in Kauffman Stadium after a Royals game and by the players lot. And then Ben Zobrist rolls out in like a 2008 Ford Mustang. And I'm like, is that Ben Zobrist? And my buddy's like, yeah, go get his autograph. And I'm like, nah, I don't know. He's like, nah, come on, do it. And my buddy's an autograph guy. Like he'd done it previously or whatever. And, you know, I'll tell you, it's weird asking for an autograph of someone that's like 2 years younger than you or, you know, your same age. But I'm like, hey man, you want to sign in this? And he's like signing it through the window, and he had just gotten done signing 15 other autographs. Also, I'll throw
but
that in
that story though.
Yeah. Oh, and then I go, hey man, I go, what? We'd love to have you in Kansas City for re-sign after this season. And he looks up to me, he goes, yeah, yeah, I'll think about it. And his response just told me like, I think he's moving on. I mean, that was before we won the World Series, but that was like a month before we were World Series champions.
That's awesome.
But yeah, like you said, when there's a story attached to the item, it just, the sentimental value goes up, you know.
Because like I have stuff signed by, like I have a team signed Yankee baseball for the World Series. It's got the World Series logo on it and all that stuff that like, it was a team signed ball. And I mean, dude.
So you got Rivera, you got Jeter, you got, what you got there is essentially in 50 years, like some sort of Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Jimmy Fox,
Murderer's Row,
yeah, type of autographed baseball there. Wow, that's a.
And for me though, it's not so much that like I have it. It's all the stories that go along with it that I had to follow around George Steinbrenner when he got to the stadium, and he was telling me what to fix. So he's like, "I want this moved. I want this moved.
Holy
I need you to do this."
You got to be George Costanza.
Basically,
you got to be George.
My
God.
And the coolest thing is so underneath the stadium, there's one long tunnel where all the players, both teams have to go by. And then also, too, if you were to go down to the field, you have to go by like the visiting locker room. When there's not stairs, but there's a ramp that goes down to the field. And then the kitchen's on one side and the locker room's on the other. So right where that ramp is, a lot of the TV reporters would hang out there. Joe Buck, Joe Morgan, everybody would hang out there getting like the scoop on what was going on. And so I remember later on, he comes in, the boss comes in, and he's like, get those fucking assholes out of there. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I mean, that's Joe Morgan and Joe Buck. I'm like, Joe Morgan's a Hall of Famer. Like, how am I supposed to So my boss is like, you go do it. He told you to do it. Like my boss is like, dude, he pointed at you, go get rid of him. I'm like, oh fuck. So I went over there. I'm like, hey guys, can you kind of move it along? And they're like, yeah, whatever, kid. I'm like, Mr. Steinbrenner. And then poof, they disappeared.
just like that. Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, just remember just
Joe Morgan's like, look, I've dealt with Marc Schott before, and I know what evil is, but George Steinbrenner, exactly. I'm out of here. Okay.
Yeah. And that those stories that go along with it, that's what I, that when I see that ball, that jogs that memory. And then also too, the morning of the very last game, I was the first person in there, and we had a whole bunch of team signed pearls out on the table, and there's a locker room full of gray Yankee jerseys, and it's just quiet. And I remember I actually have pictures of that, and just like sitting there going, wow, like this is amazing. Like the World Series, one of the best teams in baseball is here right now. I'm like, man, it was just kind of like really kind of cool.
I wanted to ask you too, like, how disappointing was that that they just got swept? I mean, they barely even showed up for the World Series. The Padres did.
We won one game.
I thought you guys got. Okay, I'm sorry. I
think we won one. Yeah, we won one because I think it was 3-2. Yeah, I think it was. I remember we won one in New York. We won one game in New York, and then they came back and they did it here, and that was kind of hard because you would be in the locker room with these guys that you're kind of hoping that they do well, but also too, you know that your paycheck and in some of your other buddies are over on the other side. So like when the Padres beat the Braves, you just kind of like, we would silently cheer and then we'd go over to the home side and have a couple beers, then come back over, then go back over and see how Trevor's doing and Tony and Ken Caminiti and all these guys, then come back over and see, Chipper Jones and Andrew Jones and all these guys, Schmaltz and all these guys just being sad. And you felt bad for him, but you were like, hey, we're going to the World Series.
Yeah, because, I looked it up. In the NLCS, you guys defeated the Braves 4-2. There's your sad, very sad Chipper Jones. But it actually was a sweep. It was 4-0.
It was? Okay.
Yeah, it was a 4.
Okay, sorry.
Because I remembered reading that because the Petco does a really good job of, you know, honoring the Padre past, which historically, you know, goes back to the PCL. You got Ted Williams playing in the 30s as a teenager over there at what used to be Lane Field right over there.
By the train station.
Yep, exactly. And which coincidentally, the longest home run ever was hit by Ted Williams in Lane Field because... because it landed in a train and made its way all the way to LA. Exactly. Ryan, man, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll definitely do this again or even in person next time I'm down.
Hey, I was going to say you should come over, and because I don't think I've taken that stuff out since I've moved. So that's been about like 4 years.
That would
and
be fun.
You should come.
Maybe.
Yeah. You should come down here and we can tear through all the stuff I have. In that's just for the Padres. I worked for the minor league hockey team here. Got to meet Gretzky.
Okay, so we'll do a part three
soccer team. I actually have Cal Ripken. He owned a soccer team, and I had Cal Ripken sign a soccer ball.
Wow. That's got to be a rare piece of sports. Well, maybe we'll bring cameras. We'll document some of it.
And, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah,
that'd be a lot of fun.
I love that kind of stuff. And to do what we've just done right now during this interview face to face would be, that would be great. And so, and again, listeners, that's at Eat a Burrito on Twitter and Instagram. And
right now, if you're in the Southern California area, you can win burritos for a year. If you go to surf.eataburrito/win-free-burritos, you can win burritos for an entire year from Don Carlos.
There you go. And then I'm sure that tweet you probably
is on Facebook.
Yeah, your Facebook, and you know, it's been tweeted out.
I'm good at that.
Sweet, man. Well, and then, you know, Don Carlos, is it Don Carlos Taco Shop?
Don Carlos Taco Shop. Also, too, that's it. Go out and for me, go see some comedy. Go see some stand-up comedy. Go see John here. Go see wherever you're at and listening to this. I personally believe that the world can be better if you go see some stand-up comedy and you laugh a little bit. And also, too, share a meal with someone, especially someone that that may need it or you may not agree with. Go share a meal with them, and you look at people a little bit differently.
Yeah, and then, you know, and just to keep you here for another second, because I wanted to praise some of the work you've done. When the Chargers moved, Ryan did a great thing, and he re-bought Chargers jerseys, jackets specifically, hoodies, things like that. But if you brought those items into his shop, you got free food. And then not only that, those jackets then went to needy homeless, which there are a lot of in Southern California, especially San Diego. And not only did the jacket go to that needy person, a burrito went to that person as well. And so just to give you an idea of the, of some of the things Ryan and with Don Carlos Taco Shop are doing in the community in Southern California, San Diego area. But little things like that, you guys at home can do something similar to that. It's, you know, just
you don't have to do anything big. And it's as simple as going to the grocery store, buying a jar of peanut butter, buying some jelly, buying some white bread, and just going out and giving it to someone. It makes sandwiches for a homeless person somewhere. I'm not a big fan of, like most people, of giving money, but sharing a meal, you know that they're going to eat it. But yeah, that was a real tough time because I'm a huge Raider fan, and seeing one of my arch enemies go, but also seeing the pain and all, like these friends that I've lived in San Diego with, seeing them like really hurt and then burning their jerseys and jackets. I'm like, oh man, dude, like there's a lot of homeless people that could really use that, and they don't care what it says on it. They just want to be warm.
No, it's great because I know next year when I come down to do a show, when I go downtown, I was joking when I said it to you a couple months ago when you were grabbing them. I'm like, you know what? There's going to be more Chargers jackets seen around downtown now in San Diego, thanks to you, than there ever have been now that the team's gone.
Oh, and it was so I call it a divine appointment. I remember going to a show in Pacific Beach. And I had, we did it over like three nights. And one of the nights I had just a bunch of them, bunch of jackets in the back of my van. And there was a kid that came out and he was in shorts and a t-shirt and he looked cold. And I'm like, dude, today is your lucky day. And I decked him out. I gave him like three jackets because he just looked cold. And I'm like, man, dude, I can, something about today, I was meant to be here at this time to see you and to give you these jackets to keep you warm. I don't know why or how, but I mean, that always kind of like resonated that I had no idea, like God's got a plan.
Yeah. You know,
with it or not.
And to defend the Spanos family, they didn't move the team up to LA to make more money. They did it so that you could have that jacket giveaway, and then that cold homeless teenager could be warm on that very, very cold Southern California night.
I hope that teenager goes on to win a Nobel Peace Prize or something.
Brian,
no, thank you so much.
No problem, man. It was great, man. Like I said, go to Don Carlos Taco Shop. Ryan will take care of you.
in La Jolla on Pearl Street, kitty catty corner from the world famous Comedy Store. We talk about it every episode, and if you've gone to San Diego and you didn't visit there, then I'm sorry to say you kind of missed out on what's quickly becoming a staple in the San Diego County area. So anyway, Ryan, you're the best. Thanks again. The stories were great, and we're probably going to have you back on at some point just for some more. Just, I don't even need names. Just, you can be like, this guy may or may not be in the Hall of Fame, and but whoever it was definitely did this. If you want to do something like that, whatever. Either way, that was great. Thanks for coming on. So that concludes this week's episode. Next week's episode, same. I've got some more. I've got a similar... our guest had a similar position, but in the Kansas City Royals dugout and throughout the 80s and early 90s. So there's some really good stories coming next week as well. All right, guys, as you're listening to this, I'm in the Midwest, or I'm in the Northwest. Go to laughprince.com, laughprince.com. They will have all the dates. Medford, Oregon, Eureka, Seattle a couple times, just all over the place. And you can also go to johnjonishere.com. Remember, June 25th. Eric's writing for the BET Awards, so that's a Sunday night, I think 8 p.m. on BET. Check that out, Leslie Jones hosting. It's going to be funny. Guys, thanks for your ears. Tell a friend, subscribe, comment, all that stuff, but more importantly, please stay obsessed.